Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by the celebrating a goal like a normal person to my celebrating a goal in the face of a ball boy. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Oh, Justin, I hope you're well. Do I still sound croaky?
Yeah, you sound a bit more Phil Mitchell now. So you've gone from sort of, you know, Sean Dyche, if he had a throat infection, to Deirdre Bolla, to Phil Mitchell. You're going through the soaps / ginger managers.
Well, I'm progressing if I'm Phil Mitchell then, aren't I? Because he's not as bad as bloody Barlow and Dyche, is he?
I don't know. You don't quite have that East End twang or the feisty, grumbling look on your face, but you certainly do split opinion like him.
Yeah. All right. That's fair enough. I suppose this is just my punishment, really, for having 10 pints a day for 5 days straight, isn't it? So you know what? I'm back on the wagon now, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the number one championship podcast, the second tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. It's the final game week before we officially start the business end of the season, Justin. Isn't it? That's what we usually say it is. It's the business end once we get past the final international break.
Yeah, it's the mini season, isn't it? The mini season begins, and that is therefore deemed and branded the business end. It's the business season, business end season. I'm trying to sort of trying to find a way of succinctly
business end of the season.
I know I was trying to give it a title, an official title, but actually I just
business
repeated.
End of the season. But you moved the words around for some reason. But it is heading towards the business end of the season. So we've got loads for us to talk about here, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, Leeds United going top of the league. We'll talk about that very shortly. We've of course got the South Wales derby, Ipswich absolutely thrashing Sheffield Wednesday, a relegation battle which doesn't seem to be moving right now. Over the last three game weeks, the bottom eight have managed a total of 2 wins between them. No one is informed down there, so we'll talk about that as well. Also going to have a brief chat about what's happened at Reading this week, because we both agree it's very important that we do so, so we'll talk about that as well. And we've also got footballers, our listeners are betting strange places, more streets won't forget for players, and of course, Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. So Leeds United are top of the championship. It's after beating Millwall 2-0. They are only top by goal difference, and Leicester still have a game in hand, but still a huge moment for Leeds United. The game itself, Leeds weren't amazing, but they didn't really look like not winning this here, Justin, did they?
Yeah, it was an interesting game. Maybe a bit of a strange one in the fact that you expect Leeds to be that swashbuckling best they were. But I just think the way Millwall set up, they really do restrict that. So I think you've got to lay some credit to Millwall there. But actually, Leeds, what they did is they got the job done. They did what the likes of Ipswich and Southampton failed to do at the key moments in which they needed to do it at some point this season. At various points this season. Yeah, they got the job done. And I think it was all set off by that incredible strike by Willy Nonto. And I think that strike alone, it was a fantastic finish by Nonto, but it was from outside the area. You know, it wasn't a cutting open of Millwall. I think Millwall stood firm in that chance, and therefore you need a little bit of something special to get you ahead and win the game essentially. And that's what old Willie did.
Old Willie, yeah, that's exactly what he did. I mean, you are right. Millwall defended so well. There was a challenge by Jafet Tanganga essentially on the line, which was remarkable. So I think Millwall defended so well that maybe they could make the argument that they deserved something from the game. Having said that, Leeds did have an absolute stonewall penalty turned down in the first half. So, look, Leeds weren't amazing, but at the same time, as I was alluding to before, they deserved the win here. So, Leeds are top of the league. On New Year's Day, they were 17 points behind Leicester. 17! That is just insane, isn't it, Justin? That we're now at this stage, before the next international break, where Leeds United head into it top of the championship. Mind-blowing.
It is absolutely mind-blowing. It really is. I mean, just to tie it back to a moment in the game that was also mind-blowing is that Willie Nonto is squaring up to Jake Cooper on the floor, who is literally twice the size of Cooper. And let's talk about the monumental battle that Leeds have had to put up, well, or had to do in terms of, you know, that David versus Goliath again scenario. And that 17 points is just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it's literally like Willie Nonto standing up to Jake Cooper. You know, he's got no chance in the grand scheme of things, but Leeds have given themselves a chance by being so bloody consistent. They were absolutely remarkable. They have been absolutely remarkable. It's been relentless in the amount of clean sheets they've been keeping. The sort of the changing of forms of players, if that makes sense. So Dan James has been in form and he's come out of form. Then Willie Nonto stepped up and he's been in form. It just goes to show you, you know, the amount of strength and depth that Leeds have got and what they've got. I mean, Ruta got two assists in this game, for example, against Millwall, and he's been superb all the way through it. The clean sheets, the partnership of Joe Rodon and Ethan Ampadu in midfield, in defence, have been fantastic, and Gruev stepping into midfield. It's just everything's clicked at the right time for Leeds, and this is what I've been saying throughout the season. Daniel Farke teams, they know how to peak. Bloody hell, are they peaking?
But this is one hell of a peak, isn't it? Because 12 wins from 13 is just ridiculous. And even in this season, where the standard is so goddamn high, it's been enough to put them top of the table. I mean, keep in mind, they've only conceded 3 goals in this 13-game run, by the way. So defensively, they have been insanely good. And when you've got the attacking talent they have, that bit almost solves itself more often than not. And you're right, you know, Nonto's been in incredible form. And at times, I mean, Crescencio Somerville is very much one of the contenders for player of the season, but even he's had his dips during this run of form. And players elsewhere, like Patrick Bamford, like Jorginho Ruta, even Joel Pirro on occasion, they've all stepped up and made the attacking talent they have count. And I mean, this 12 games in 12 wins from 13 is one of the most sublime runs of form you'll ever see at this level. And while I must point out, Leicester will still be massive bottlers if they throw it away from here, Leeds would be more than worthy winners at this stage, wouldn't they, Justin?
Yeah, what's the opposite end of the spectrum for someone bottling it? Because they've reverse bottled it. They've recycled the bottle. They've found new purpose. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something clever.
I suppose so. Yes, they've taken Leicester's bottle and firmly recycled it into what could potentially be the championship trophy. And that would be some bloody good recycling, wouldn't it?
I mean, the confidence of this Leeds team has made a tiny, tiny human being in Willie Nonto want to fight a man literally twice his size, just to bring it back to that moment in that game in Jake Cooper.
If you're left an imprint on your mind, hasn't it?
It's just an image I've got in my head just to find sort of someone who stood 3 foot tall, literally Jake Cooper 7 foot tall, and you know that a fight almost taking place would have been absolutely incredible. But you know, people, a team in confidence, they don't do that, and that's Leeds. That's Leeds for you.
I suppose that is Leeds for you. So Leeds are top of the league, only on goal difference, and Leicester do have a game in hand. Leicester didn't play this weekend because of the FA Cup. But one team who's keeping the pressure on the likes of Leeds and Leicester with regards to the promotion race is Ipswich Town. They beat Sheffield Wednesday 6-0. It's the biggest win of the season so far in the Championship. 3-word reviews here from Daniel. Amari Clutch Hutchinson. Jason says 6-0. Danny says lucky 6 goals. George Mate says give in peachy. And Justin, Ipswich were absolutely sublime here, weren't they?
It was just a day where everything clicked. It's quite incredible how, you know, you go back through the highlights, you look at the chances that Ipswich created, and it was just one after one after one. It was just ridiculous, relentless. And you sort of felt sorry for Sheffield Wednesday that they caught Ipswich on a day like this, because, you know, on one hand, you want to try and make a case as to why this was such a damning result for Wednesday, but at the same time, Ipswich was just so bloody good. Every time Hutchinson got the ball, he looked like something was going to happen. And I think it's so rare that those types of games come along. And again, it comes at a good time, because then you go into that international break full of confidence. You just literally swept a team away with such ease. You know, the work on and off the ball from Ipswich, the way they were getting into dangerous positions, how quickly they were doing it. It was just an incredible performance. And I think that's probably where Leicester need to, that's where they need to be concerned, because the way Leeds are going, I'd fancy them for the title. The way Ipswich are going at the moment, I'd fancy them for automatics over Leicester.
It's a big shout. It's a big shout. But I tell you what, it's not an outrageous one at this stage, which is pretty remarkable in itself. But you're right, this was Ipswich at their best. Just such a joy to watch. And they don't take their foot off the pedal. Even when the result was in the bag, they still kept going. Amari Hutchinson in particular was unbelievable. It genuinely may have been one of the best performances you'll see from an individual all season, because he was electric. But then so many others who you could throw praise at here. It really was an exceptional all-round team performance. Also handy when you've got a bagsman like Ali Alhamadi coming off the bench as well, who can, you know, chip in with a few goals himself. So an incredible, impressive performance here from Ipswich Town. One which says to Leicester and Leeds that Ipswich mean business and they're going to keep pushing until the very end with regards to automatic promotion. I think one final thing I will mention on this game is you look at this disparity between these two here, Justin. It's quite remarkable to think that they were only separated by 2 points in League One last season, but you've got one team right at the other end of the table compared to the other. So, Justin, based off what you were just saying, you think Ipswich will catch Leicester at this stage? That's a big shout from a man who's been so against the Ipswich of going up Tractor all season.
Stop with this fucking narrative. I'm going against the Tractor. Stop stirring the pot. Honestly, like, I don't get any hate.
You heard me then, Justin, with my little guilty laugh going, hee.
No, I did hear it. I did hear it. You're making people hate me. And yeah, it's just not true, Ipswich fans. I've just been a little bit sceptical because defensively you are a bit shit sometimes. But yeah, if I was Enzo Maresca, I would be bricking it. Obviously, they're coming. They played in the FA Cup weekend this weekend against Chelsea. They weren't fantastic. They didn't really create too much other than a worldie and an own goal. So, again, if you want to take something away from that FA Cup game from a Leicester perspective, they weren't great. So Ipswich probably looking at that and going, well, we've just absolutely demolished a team who are maybe going to League One with such ease. And then Leicester are struggling against a mid-table Premier League side, which is, you know, the disparity is quite big, but at the same time, it's all about those good habits and, you know, good performances, and just didn't really see that from Leicester. So if I'm Enzo Maresca, I'm looking at that and I'm going, ah, not good. Not good at all. Not good at all. They're only 1 point behind us and they really are confident and in form and we're not.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Justin. Ipswich are just absolutely flying right now, aren't they? And while they did have that obvious blip in the final 5 minutes against Cardiff last weekend, the fact that right now they are banging form would be one of the form teams in the Championship, if not the form team in the Championship, actually, had it not been for Leeds, who are just, you know, romping home at the moment, aren't they? So Ipswich will be looking at them thinking, Leeds, probably looking, as assuming things carry on, that they're a bit far gone. Whereas Leicester are the ones to catch now. And that, from a Leicester perspective, is ridiculous, isn't it? That it's got to this stage where they may not get automatically promoted. But that's because these two are just absolutely tanking it along. So the Ipswich are going up Tractor is flying, and it may run over a couple of foxes on the way. But it's now back-to-back losses for Sheffield Wednesday, Justin. In fairness, those back-to-back losses, we will point out, have been against Leeds and Ipswich, which is, you know, it's not two bad games to lose, I suppose, is it? But how concerned should we be about this performance, Justin? Because, as we say, it's the biggest loss by a Championship team this season.
Yeah, it's quite surprising. We've only seen one 6-0 so far this season. We usually see a couple.
Do we?
I think so, yeah. I'd like to think they're more common than they have been this season, but I might just be making that up for the sake of making it up. But I'd like to think it's more common. But anyway, it's a damning result on paper, but I think if I take some confidence, I think Danny Raw was quite positive post-game. He literally said, yes, Ipswich were brilliant. I think the reassuring aspect came from the fact that he wasn't feeling sorry for himself. If I go back to Joe Edwards, he was a manager, you know, if you're comparing two inexperienced managers, Joe Edwards at Millwall was, you know, there was, you know, a lot of negativity. There's a lot of, oh, we need to do this, we need to do that. You know, a lot of feeling sorry for themselves. Whereas Danny Raw isn't. He's just saying, well, we need to, you know, let's get to the next game. And I think that sort of brings it back into perspective for me. You know, he's very much he's just breathing positivity. So yes, this result is bad on paper. And yes, they did lose to Leeds as well. And they're not fantastic results. But they're two top teams and it's going to be difficult game results. Anything is a bonus against these two sides, especially when you go away to Portland Road, for example. So yes, they've got 2 weeks to work on it now and react in that next game after the international break.
Yeah. Well, I think this result was 75% Ipswich being exceptional, 25% Sheffield Wednesday being poor. You can't lose 6-0 without there being a decent element of your team being poor. But look, when you're 23rd in the table, you're always going to struggle against the teams in the top three. The big bonus is, despite the back-to-back losses, it's only cost them a single point because the teams above them have all struggled to find points themselves. So we've got to, you know, step back for a second, look at it from this perspective. Leeds are in a are in a dream position compared to where they were 6 months ago. They've got 8 games remaining. Half of them are against sides in the bottom half. Because there's so many teams down there, I don't think it'll take many wins to avoid relegation. So they've just got to continue their form from before those two losses, haven't they, really? And they may very well find themselves quite clear of relegation. That's all it takes at this stage.
Well, the teams down there are really poor, and there's a lot more to say on that throughout the show, because, as I say, none of the teams are in form at the moment, which is quite crazy, because a couple of weeks ago all the teams were in form. It's quite bizarre how it's playing out. Genuinely, it's a shootout at the moment.
It really is. That's the only way you can really put it into it. Just then, let's go to the South Wales Derby. Swansea came out victorious over Cardiff, beating them 2-0. Three-word views here from Swans fans. Joseph says, Welsh football capital. Callum says, normal service resumed. From a Cardiff perspective, TM says, didn't turn up. And Justin, I know the old cliche from our big bag of cliches is form goes out the window in a derby. And this was a perfect example of that, wasn't it? Cardiff had won four in a row prior to this. Swansea had won 3 in 11. Yet Swansea were by far the better team here and really should have won by more.
Yeah, annoyingly, it doesn't do anything to dispel football cliches, does it, in the fact that form literally went out of the window for the game. But you are right, Swansea were dominant. And I think this is more of what we were looking for in terms of the Swansea way, was it not? This is how Swansea want to play. They want to dominate the ball. They want to cut teams open. And it felt like this is the first time we've seen it probably this season in this sort of, I wouldn't say emphatic, but as convincingly as it has been all season, especially under Luke Williams. And what a time for it to come as well, because Swansea were brilliant. They were intense. Well, they had intensity. They had the aggression you need in a derby, but they matched it with, you know, a lot of composure and calmness. I think that's a key thing. They also managed the moments in which they came under pressure as well. Really, really well. Because Cardiff are a physical team. They're a very physical team. And let's be honest, Swansea are not. So, yeah, I think Swansea managed the game incredibly well. They managed the derby incredibly well. And were fully deserving of the 3 points.
Yeah, it was as convincing a 2-0 win as you can possibly do, really, wasn't it? I was amazed at how poor Cardiff were. First of all, it's a derby game. And they'll also have that extra spring in their step after their recent form. But they offered so little here. It was a really disappointing performance from them. However, full credit to Swansea. They were up for the big occasion and pretty much dominated. They defended excellently. I was very impressed with Ronald, who's a winger they signed from Brazil in January. He looks a really exciting player. And a great moment for Liam Cullen, who's from South Wales, scoring the first goal. Actually, probably should have had a hat-trick in this one. Missed a penalty and then a great chance from a header. But, you know, he'll still take that as one of the greatest moments of his career, I'm sure, being a local lad. He revealed after the game that he was actually Swansea's chef who did the team talk before the game. How about that, Justin?
Yeah, just glad he was able to cook something motivational for players. It clearly worked. There's several occasions Swansea were able to slice through Cardiff, and I think for the Swans as well, the game never really reached boiling point.
Because it's you, I don't know if these puns are intentional or not.
I wrote them.
I was going to say, yeah, good stuff. For you, that's pretty good. Did you also see Luke Williams partying with Swansea fans afterwards?
I love that.
Having shots with them and everything. That's what we like to see, isn't it, Justin?
Yeah, I absolutely love that and adore that. I mean, I'm not going to bash Michael Duff, but you wouldn't ever have seen him do that. Maybe not even Russell Martin, to be honest. So credit to Luke Williams getting in on the booze. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm all up for that. And him joining in with the chants as well. He's trying to be a bit professional with it, but I did see him mouthing along at certain points. But I think this is what we need to see from Luke Williams, isn't it? Him proving that he's the man to take Swansea into the long term, because he is much more of a Swansea manager than Michael Duff. That's mainly based on the style of play. But I think he's also got family living down there. He used to be at Swansea before. So I was going to say he gets the club. He gets the club.
He gets it.
But this is a really easy way to just get the fans on side, isn't it? I'm surprised more managers don't do this kind of thing, because it's just a simple tap-in, isn't it? Why are you pulling that face, Justin? Get on the piss with the lads afterwards.
I'm just trying to imagine sort of certain managers doing it. Like, I mean, I can't imagine Enzo Maresca doing it, for example, with Leicester.
Who would be the last manager you want to have shots with in the Championship?
I'm just looking at a list now. I would probably go with, I don't know, John Eustace seems like a quite placid, boring guy. I like him as a manager.
I reckon get a couple of Sambucas down him, we'll be fine. I reckon Enzo Maresca would be incredibly annoying after a few shots.
Won't do shots. He'll drink red wine.
No, but if he had to have shots, you know? If you get him a couple of tequilas, I don't think he'd say no, but I think he'd be quite irritating on a night out anyway. You get a couple of shots down him and he'd be unbearable.
No, I might go with Mark Robbins as being quite a boring guy to be around for shots, to be fair.
Justin, did you not see him in the FA Cup? He'd be great.
Maybe he will. No, I'm not. Yeah, maybe time around there. Yeah, maybe. I'll go with Enzo Maresca, actually.
I think that's, he's the clear answer here, isn't he? So a brilliant weekend for Swansea. They were also the only team in the bottom 11 to win. So it means they're now 7 points clear of the bottom three. So you'd have thought they would stay up now. Let's go through some of the sides who it's not looking as good for. Plymouth Argyle have now lost 6 of their last 9. It's after they were beaten 1-0 at home by Preston. 3-word reviews here from Plymouth fans. Callum says never scoring again. Tom says Ian Foster out. Twist of Lime says Foster's got to go. And Justin, it's Ryan Lowe's revenge. Of course, his first game back at Plymouth after leaving them a couple of years ago wasn't the most popular decision from a Plymouth perspective when that happened. Yet he pretty much got a better reception from the home supporters than their actual manager Ian Foster did. There were loud chants during this game of "We want Foster out," and Justin, he's only been there for 2.5 months, but it looks like he may not last much longer.
Yeah, it's not looking good. I remember back in January suggesting that good boards, and I quote this, good boards can make bad decisions, and this is, you know, looking like one. I also suggested back in January that Plymouth could be in a relegation battle, and again, this is looking like it's currently the case. So it's not looking like it is currently the case. They're 2 points above the bottom three at the moment, and again, you look back in January, it really shouldn't have been a factor. And I think the key thing with Ian Foster is I'm not really sure what he's trying to deploy from a side of play point of view. The attack has become stifled. Morgan Whittaker's not really firing as he was. I know they lost Finn Azaz, but is that the be-all and end-all of that attack? Is that really what knitted everything together? No, I think it was bravery. I think it was naivety. I think it was a mix of everything you need in a team that's coming up from the championship, coming up to the championship with a young side. And I think Ian Foster's coached it out of him. Not to be overly critical of him, but they've been really shit since he took charge. All the good things about that Plymouth side isn't there anymore. Maybe that was overly critical, and frankly, it's quite deserved. He's taken the love out of football for me in Foster us.
Well, the recent form is massively concerning, and it's 6 losses from 9. And in the last 3, they've played Sheffield Wednesday, Blackburn and Preston, picked up just 1 point. Now, they've been poor away from home all season, but their form at home park was what was keeping them afloat. Now that's gone as well, and they've lost 4 on the bounce. So they've gone from looking pretty safe when Foster came in to being in immediate danger. So it looks like they're going to have to knock this one on the head and say they got it wrong, Justin.
As I say, that's what makes a good board, is if they do sit there and go, actually, you know, we made a mistake, we can make a change. But is now really the time to do it? I don't know. And I think with Ian Foster, they committed to a young coach as a philosophy, and it's just not worked out, and that happens. You know, Millwall did it with Joe Edwards, and they are starting to see the results under Neil Harris. So maybe that's the case with Plymouth, is they got to reanalyze things in this international break, and maybe make that plunge, because they were a good side, and now they're not.
Well, it's surprising, because Plymouth are an exceptionally well-run club, aren't they? But all that hard work to get them to the Championship could be undone if they don't change something soon. Do you know what it actually reminds me of, Justin? I think this is a really good comparison. Let me take you back to Luton Town's journey to the Premier League. Yeah. Obviously, they're pound for pound the best run club in the country for me. But absolutely nobody remembers that they nearly got relegated when they came into the Championship. They had a guy called Graham Jones, not Nathan Jones, Graham Jones. And he wasn't great at all, was he? They had to sack him and get Nathan Jones back in, and the rest is history. But the point I'm making is that I think you might be right. These brilliantly run clubs like Luton, like Plymouth, not miracle workers. And this seems to be an example of that. Could Plymouth press the Warnock button, Justin? Because reports today say Neil Warnock is up for a return to management in England. This could be perfect, Justin. Plymouth close to Cornwall for Warnie. He saves them from relegation. And we get loads of content for the podcast. Sounds perfect.
Yeah, it does. I think the only thing that makes sense with this is the fact that he lives down in Cornwall. Other than that, I don't want it to happen. I just want Neil Warnock to retire.
Think about the content.
I know, but this has been the thing now for ages, and it's the fact if he just retires, then we don't have to think about it anymore. We don't have to. I don't know. We need a new Neil Warnock.
You're not thinking about the content. That's the most important thing here.
I'm just Warnock fatigued at the moment. Maybe if he comes in and he takes over, I tell you what he's got to do. If he does what the Plymouth mascot did, i.e. slide down the rails and fall over it, then I'm absolutely all for it. But I can't see a 76-year-old man doing that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What on earth was happening there? I'm so confused.
What the Plymouth mascot was doing was he was physically displaying a metaphor of Plymouth season.
sliding down from the top
and falling and tripping over the hoardings.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, there's a video of the Plymouth mascot going arse over tit over the advertising hoardings after sliding down one of the rails in the stands. It's one of the most bizarre videos ever, but absolutely brilliant at the same time. We need a bit more context around that one, I think, because I don't have anything else to offer. Otherwise, it was very, very funny. Justin, this win leaves Preston 5 points off the playoffs. Only Ipswich, Leeds and West Brom have won more points than them over the last 8 games. So should they be taken more seriously as a top six contender, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this might rub Preston fans up the wrong way, but it's hard to see because their results and runs of form this season have been so volatile. They've won 6 in their last 11, which is an incredible run of results, and they put themselves in a really, really positive position. But before then, it was 5 wins in 19. So I think the best bet with this Preston side is to see how they come out of the international break. As I say, they put themselves in a really good position. They play some really good, incisive counter-attacking football. And the next 4 games after the international break, you would consider on paper very, very winnable. They've got Rotherham, Birmingham, Watford and Huddersfield. They're very winnable. So as I say, if you consider the contrasting form of the teams and Preston, you'd expect them to win those games. So come out of that run with 10 points at the very least out of 12. Then let's see what's what. Because as I say, this time last season, I think we were having the same conversation.
Yeah, well, it's made increasingly more difficult by the fact it's essentially just the one spot available at this stage, isn't it? West Brom seem to have shored up that 5th place. So, look, Preston are in great form. I don't think anyone saw this coming not too long ago when there were calls for Ryan Lowe to be sacked. But he deserves a lot of credit for not only turning it around, but also getting them in playoff contention, which I don't think anyone saw coming not too long ago. Just before we have a quick break, Justin, Coventry are through to the FA Cup semi-finals for the first time in over 35 years after beating Wolves in a dramatic game at Molineux. Huge congratulations to them. Also, nice to see one of us doing well in the cup, as always, isn't it? However, one of us, championship side, you know, we're all one big party here. However, this could potentially cause a huge headache for the authorities, because if Coventry got through to the FA Cup final and reached the playoff final, which is still very much a possibility, both games are currently scheduled 24 hours apart at Wembley. So presumably one of them would have to be moved, wouldn't they? But
yeah,
that could cause carnage.
Yeah, carnage. I mean, let's be honest, it would obviously be moved. I think it should be anyway. Wembley pitch. Not the playoff final, the FA Cup final.
I'm not sure the FA will see it like that.
Oh, fuck them. mainly because, as I say, like that turnaround's tight for the pitch, for starters, and the pitch usually gets chewed up by the time the last playoff final, EFL playoff final, comes along. So the pitch is always pretty crap by that point. And I think it's just proper pleb behaviour. I use this word in the week, but it's proper pleb behaviour from organisers, probably presuming that it will be just be the big clubs getting there. So I think what we should all do, we should all really, really campaign for Coventry to get through to the final, to stick the middle finger up to the establishment, because this is proper stupid.
I would love to see it happen just to see what does happen, because it's a very curious incident, but they clearly didn't expect this to be a possibility at all when it genuinely might be. And it's a fascinating thought. A shout out as well for Mark Robbins celebrating in the face of a child when Coventry scored the winner. The ball boy was apparently giving him a bit of stick, but he has apologised. But still, good stuff.
Right, never apologise. Never apologise. I'm sorry. Never apologise for that. It taught the child a lesson.
Justin Peach isn't the best PR person. Let's take a quick break. After that, we'll talk about the rest of the games in the Championship this weekend.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Second Tier podcast. It's now time for us to check out how our Second Tier multiple with SBK got on, which included our game of the week, as well as Justin and I's two bankers from Friday. We had Cardiff, Huddersfield and Ipswich, so no luck for us again. I'm certain we've got to get one at some point, Justin, surely. But we'll be back on Friday with a preview show with SBK, where we'll be doing a bit of something a bit different next Friday. So you've got that to look forward to over the international break. Justin, it's now time for us to do a round of footballers our listeners have met in strange places. Ongoing thing where listeners have been sending in their random meetings with former footballers, preferably Championship ones, and the stranger the place, the better. This is from Steve, the Leeds fan. He says, I once had a very drunk Seth Johnson fall into me at a pub in Headingley around 2005. He was with Lee Sharp, who was very apologetic and clearly less pissed than his mate. I like that one, Justin. Seth Johnson, that's a name I haven't thought of in a long time.
I mean, being a Derby fan, I'm just, my heart's pounding at the sound of Seth Johnson. Gotta love old Seth. The man played in a playoff final with a torn ACL and then he retired straight after. What a guy. Obviously, Leeds fans didn't see it, but Derby fans did, and crew.
Well, there you go. Well, this is from Rob Payne. He says, I was with two friends on an impromptu trip to Prague about 20 years ago. And as the Brits are typically people of culture, we found ourselves in an Irish pub. Anyway, three guys walk in and sit next to us. I instantly recognised one of them as Viv Anderson. After a few minutes, he leans back and asks us, what do you recommend in here, lads? He caught us off guard. So the first thing that came into my head was the meat platter is good. We didn't even try it. He seemed pretty pleased when it arrived, though. Thank you for that, Rob. Never really expected that, Justin.
A meat platter in an Irish bar in the Czech Republic spells danger for me. So I hope Viv Anderson came out of that unscathed.
He enjoyed it, apparently, which is good stuff, good stuff. If you want to send in more footballers you've met in a strange place, then please do, secondtierpod@gmail.com. We've also got some Streets Won't Forget players here, Justin. Adam Whitehead says, morning, virgins, love the pod. Hall's Streets Won't Forget player is the Polish god himself, Kamil Grzycki. Keep up the good work. I loved Kamil Grzycki back in the days when we first started the pod, Justin.
Yeah, I know. You used to ooze over him. And obviously, he went to West Brom, and then Bowen was sold to West Ham. It was in carnage for Hull after that point. But what a player. What a technically gifted player. Not an athlete. not an athlete, but wonderfully technically. I think he fits the definition of Streets Won't Forget perfectly.
Yeah, he was proper class. Just as good as Jared Bowen that season, by the way. But doesn't really get mentioned as much for obvious reasons. But Cameron Kosicki was absolutely class. This is from Chris Deasy. He says, for Sheffield Wednesday, it's Majid Bugera, the original Rolls-Royce defender, a ball-playing centre-back back in 2006 when it wasn't cool. Far too good for us. And we've also got this suggestion from Dan Gibbard. He is a QPR fan. He says for them, it's Alejandro Foulin. Another good one, Justin.
Yeah, QPR have had quite a few, haven't they? Yeah, it's just Foulin. Foulin was good, and Bugera. I for some reason, I've got a picture in my mind with him with a face mask on. You know, when you break an eye socket or a cheekbone, you've got a face mask on. He just looked hard as well. A ball-playing defender who looked hard. What a mix.
I think Alejandro Foulin has blocked us on Twitter. I think I've got it.
What did you do? What did you do?
I think it was, you know, the random footballer silly tweets that we do each day. I think he took that the wrong way and decided to block us.
Maybe it's your disdain for QPR.
I'm not sure it's that. It was literally, we do them to kind of pay homage to these kind of players, you know, that the streets won't forget players. But he didn't see it that way and decided he never wanted to see us on social media ever again, which is fair enough. But Alejandro, if you are listening, then you're more than welcome to come back into our world. Justin, let's do some more matches from the Championship this past weekend. And Norwich strengthened their grip on a playoff place after winning 3-0 away at Stoke. Three words reviews here from Stoke fans. Tom says, simply can't defend. Robbins is strikers on strike. This is for Norwich. Tance says, Norwich looking brilliant. A brilliant performance by Norwich, Justin. A bit of a stroll in the park for them in the end, helped by some very poor Stoke defending, particularly for the first goal where Luke McNally seemed to forget that the offside rule exists. But they were very impressive here, weren't they?
Yeah, no, they were. I mean, I just want to make a point that Stoke, for some reason, a good player goes to Stoke and they become pretty shit, because Luke McNally was fantastic for Coventry last season, in the second half of last season. He wouldn't have made those sorts of mistakes. And now at Stoke, it seems to have all changed. But Norwich thoroughly took advantage of that. They were fantastic, and I mean, it just goes to show what a couple of incredible individuals will do. Boy signs, Gabriel Sara, Josh Sargent, they're fantastic individuals, and even Ashley Barnes as well, I think, deserves a bit of credit, because we don't give him enough on here. But yeah, the Norwich are a dangerous side, so dangerous, so good on the counter attack. I mean, they defended well, but Stoke didn't really offer too much in this game. But Norwich took advantage of that. They did it incisively, and that's what good teams do. They just do things with a bit of a swagger, and that's what they did. They were very, very comfortable in this game in Norwich, and it showed.
Yeah, they were very comfortable here, and they've won a few games quite comfortably recently, so much so that I may have to admit that I'm wrong about Norwich, because, to be fair, I think there's a lot of Norwich fans who are also eating their words when it comes to David Wagner, but I've been constantly doubtful about whether they'll finish in the playoffs, and it's looking increasingly likely that it may end up happening. I mean, Josh Sargent coming back has transformed them, hasn't he? Really is the best striker in the league for me. Gabriel Sara has been superb all season, and Boya Saenz has been particularly electric recently. So fair play to them, and fair play to David Wagner. He's done brilliantly well to make me look very silly. Whether they finish in the top six or not, I don't know. It looks increasingly likely that it's a 3.5 team race between them, Coventry, Hull, and perhaps Preston. But not too long ago, I don't think anyone thought they'd be anywhere near this position at this stage in the season. I mean, Justin, even when Norwich were doing shockingly under David Wagner, I don't think we expected this, did we?
I stood by DW through the hard times. I stood by him. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And everyone was saying Ben Napper needs to make a decision, I was like, no, sit by old Dave. He'll see you through it, guys. And here I am. Speaking gospel, preaching gospel.
I
about the
feel
Wagner
like
vase.
You may be twisting your words
I approached this scenario with empathy, sympathy, and knowledge. And look what's happened.
The idea of sacking David Wagner at the end of the season instead of mid-season is what I'm pretty sure you said.
But he's in charge now, and Norwich is paying dividends for Norwich now. He's getting the best out of the attack, and they're not conceding too many goals either. It's a fantastic blend that I saw coming, because I said, keep David Wagner until the end of the season. He will get you to the Premier League.
Absolute bollocks. By the way, there's a good chance we have an East Anglian derby in the playoffs. That'll be juicy, wouldn't it, Justin? Well, if Ipswich do finish third, where they are now, and Norwich finish second, it's there. And this is I'm all this here is for
why,
it.
This is why I don't want Ipswich to finish in the top two. This is why I'm so sceptical of them. I'm trying to bring them down so we get this, so Championship fans get this.
Stephen Schumacher said this was Stoke's worst performance in the time that he's been there, which is quite a low bar in the first place. So that says something. Still a lot of very angry Stoke fans wanting a change of manager, and this game won't have helped matters at all. Be interesting to see if a change does happen over the international break, but one to keep an eye on. He's not the only manager in trouble, I can tell you that much. Rotherham avoided defeat for the 10th time in a row by drawing 0-0 with Huddersfield. They would have equaled the Championship record for most consecutive losses had they lost. Josh is a Rotherham fan. His three-word review, finally a point. This has to go down as a missed opportunity for Huddersfield to get a valuable 3 points, doesn't it? They were down to 10 men for the final half hour, but still, lads... It's Rotherham.
Lads, it's Rotherham is a quote, isn't it? I mean, it is so true, because Rotherham, two back-to-back 5-0 defeats, for goodness sake, and you don't score against them. What's going on here? It's not great, is it? It's not great. I know you'd add to 10 men, but surely you've got enough in your side to score a goal against a team who have conceded 77 goals this season. It's just not good enough. And as I say, it puts Huddersfield in such a hairy position where they need to be building up form, and they're just not. They're just not. And despite spending a couple of million on Reece Healy and Radulovic as well, they're not scoring goals. It's a bit of a situation.
It is a massive situation. The fact that none of the bottom eight won this weekend makes it an even bigger missed opportunity. And you mentioned them scoring goals. They're playing against the side with the worst offensive record in the Football League. So the fact that they went into this, didn't score, and didn't even create that much of note is pretty shocking. And I know Huddersfield weren't happy with the refereeing, but it's a pretty lame excuse when they played as poorly as they did. And I've seen a few Huddersfield fans questioning Andre Breitenreiter already. This was their first point in three games. But it's interesting that their striker, Bojan Radulovic, who they signed in January for quite a bit of money by Huddersfield standards, he was reported to be missing because of illness, but then tweeted that wasn't the case. So doesn't seem like a very happy camp at Huddersfield. It looked as if they were maybe moving away from the bottom three, but old Dre seems to be running into familiar problems, Justin.
I'm not overly surprised. I think some of the decision-making has been interesting. I mean, one is not fancying Alex Matos. I think the midfield lacks energy, so not having him in there, I think, is an issue. He's not started the last four, and the results over the last four games haven't been great. So I think I always bang the drum about John Worthington, because I think he did such a good job in a short space of time, but it just felt like he knew more about the squad than maybe Breitenreiter did. And this is what we're finding out now. It's a huge 2 weeks in the international break for Breitenreiter to get to know the strengths and weaknesses of this team. And it's such a basic way of saying it, but I just think at the moment he's not playing to them. He's not playing to the strengths of this team. They're not playing bravely, and they're not taking risks. And you don't take risks against the Rotherham side, who are bottom of the table, won three games all season, have conceded 77 goals. What are you doing? What's going on? What are you doing? It's ridiculous, really.
What are they doing? It's a very good question. And the final game we'll discuss involves Watford, who won in their first game under interim manager Tom Cleverley. They beat Birmingham 1-0. It's just Watford's third league win since Christmas. that was my reaction as well, Justin. Tom Cleverley's first game in charge, and it turns out he's the Messiah, Justin.
The Messiah. I mean, this is the second cliche that's proved us wrong today. Obviously, form going out of the window in a derby game, and then a new manager bounce as well. It's not ideal for the cliche.
Us wrong? I predicted this on Friday.
You did technically predict it, but I just want to dispel the theory of a new manager bounce, really. But Watford were good. They had to stand up to a few challenges, shall we say. Emmanuel Dennis's goal, we took it really, really well. Was this a swashbuckling Watford side? No, but it certainly was a lot more positive than the one we've seen. Conceded a fair few shots, but Birmingham at home, they're going to get chances. Daniel Batman was assured, because he hasn't been very good in the games he's played this season, and certainly wasn't in the previous game. So, yeah, there's certainly a lot of positives to take for Tom Cleverley. Let's see what he can do, and see if he can last here till the end of the season.
Well, I think during the malaise of the Watford going through yet another manager saga, it was pretty easy for us to forget that this is a great opportunity for cleverly to become the full-time manager. I mean, if it all goes well, he could be in charge at the start of next season, and he could really unite the club. It's been very divided in recent years, with supporters sick of the owners going through managers like it's nothing. But he could get everyone on the same footing if he turns out to be a good manager. It is only one game, so we shouldn't lose our heads too much. But there's some bloody good players at Watford, a lot of young talent as well. They just need someone to guide them in the long term, and Tommy Cleves could be that man if all goes well. And Birmingham have now won just 1 point from 6 games since Tony Mowbray stood down as manager. Now, the Daily Mirror is reporting Birmingham aren't considering bringing in an interim manager yet, but that could change. I mean, what do you think, Justin? If you were running Birmingham, would you look to get someone in until the end of the season? Perhaps even pressing the Warnock button, may I suggest?
If I was running Birmingham, I wouldn't have sacked John Eustace. So there's that. And certainly if I had sacked John Eustace, I wouldn't have brought in Wayne Rooney either. I think if you look at his performance, it was a decent performance from certain individuals. It's just a game that lacked quality. Again, I think that's the key thing with Birmingham at the moment, is they're lacking quality at key moments. So is that a call for an interim boss? I don't think so. I think Mowbray hopefully will be back relatively soon. Won't put too much pressure on him, but 2 week international breaks come at a good time for Birmingham. There are a few clubs that sit in that category, and Birmingham desperately, desperately needed that international break, and it's come, as I say, at a good time.
Well, the question is, when will Tony Mowbray be back? And as always, just to reiterate, his health is the most important thing here. It's certainly more important than how Birmingham do in the Championship this season. But in the ongoing uncertainty of when that will be, things are so dire right now that something's got to change. I still firmly believe that if Mowbray came back straight away after the international break, there would be some form of an improvement. Well, put it this way, it can't go much worse than it is right now. However, if I was Birmingham, at this stage, I'd probably tell Mowbray, let's just leave it until next season. You can come back in then. And the reason I say that is because it would just be bad for everyone involved if he rushed himself back and he comes back not 100% healthy, because that could potentially make things a lot worse. So I think the best thing to do is get someone else in for the final 8 games, whether that is Neil Warnock, I don't know, but I think that would just be perhaps even the most sensible thing to do at this situation, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very human story as well, because obviously Mowbray, you've got to make sure he's right his reign. And if he rushes himself back and makes himself poorly again, it's not good, is it? So, as you say, the first and foremost thing is making sure Mowbray's, you know, in a good place to come back. And if he isn't, then maybe you should consider an interim manager, because your Championship status is at stake here. It's at real peril, because you're on 39 points, Huddersfield are on 39 points. Wednesday are on 38 points, you're in a real danger of going down. And as I say, I think as long as Mowbray gives his blessing for it, then absolutely they should do it. But yeah, it's such a unique and weird scenario to be in, because we've not had to cover a story like this. I don't think any of the Championship club has been in this situation before. So yeah, it's a big one that new owners got, a big decision that new owners have got to take. And yeah, it's a difficult one for them.
Yeah, you're right. I can't recall any club ever being in this position. There may have been an example somewhere, but it is potentially down to stick or twist, isn't it? And I think the most sensible thing to do would be, as I say, getting an interim in, and just, you know, try to get them away from the ongoing threat of relegation. Just before we head to the polls, Justin, we wanted to once again touch on the situation at Reading, where it's been as much of a rollercoaster week as you could possibly get. Of course, we've spoken about it before. Reading have been a Championship club for many years, have only just left us in the Championship this past season, so and it feels right that we put the spotlight on them when it comes to situations like this, because they're in the process of selling their training ground to Wickham to make up for funding for the club in the short term. But local reports also say the club is in advanced talks for a deal to be agreed by a North American group as early as next week, which I think we can all agree will be very welcome news. So fingers crossed that happens. But what have you made of the training ground saga, Justin?
I'm trying to not mince my words and say something that is overly sort of volatile towards Wickham, because it did something similar with Derby in terms of sort of chasing for compensation for the whole FFP and profit sustainability sanctions. And it feels like they're ambulance chasing again. So that disappoints me a little bit. But I think this all has to go towards Dayong, the current owner of Reading, and the situation he's put the football club in. It's absolutely ridiculous that the club has to sell one of its biggest assets to keep the lights on. That isn't a player. I mean, the club has sold several players to keep the lights on, and now they're selling something that is so important for a football club, i.e. the training ground. And Reading's academy is a very, very effective one at bringing through players. So you lose that, it becomes difficult to see a successful long-term future for the football club. But at this point, it's all about staying alive. And if this keeps the lights on, then it needs to be done. But it's just a sad, sad situation that any football club in the Championship can be in. West Brom are very close to it. And this is why this story is really important to cover.
Yeah, well, in fairness to Wickham, what seems to have been forgotten here is they're getting what is essentially a Premier League training ground for a bargain price. Having said that, I think there's got to be some compassion here for Reading and the situation they're in. It's like going up to a rough sleeper and buying their dog off them for a tenner. It's just not on. And it's got to be said, as you rightly pointed out, Justin, Wickham have got form for this. When Derby are in a similar position to Reading, they tried suing them, even when they didn't have two pennies to rub together. So for me, Wickham and their fans should be ashamed of what the club's doing. I completely get that Dai Young is the main archetypal person who should be having the fingers of blame pointed at them here, but it's just like vultures just swooping over the carcass of what's potentially being left of Reading FC. And I mean, I personally don't completely understand why they're looking at selling the training ground when a takeover reportedly could be close, but fingers crossed this all gets resolved and a takeover does happen. Wickham training at a leisure centre somewhere as well, because I would love to see all of the above happen as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, hopefully it does get solved soon and every party is happy in this situation. Justin, let's do the polls. This is the part of the show where we give listeners three questions on Twitter because we want to get their thoughts on everything to do with the Championship. So the first question we asked was this. Who's the bigger club, Cardiff or Swansea?
Oh, you bastard. Cardiff. What's it, Cardiff? Yeah. I'm not going with recency bias with Premier League football. I might edge towards Cardiff on this one.
Yeah. I'd probably edge towards Swansea, I think, personally. Didn't really want to answer that question, but I'm the one who asked it in the first place. 60% of people said Cardiff, 40% said Swansea. Who would you have rather have up front for your team? Adam Armstrong, Kiefer Moore, Josh Sargent or Sammy Schmodix?
Stupid question. Stupid question.
We all know what Justin Peach is going to say. It's Big Keith, isn't it?
Big Keith.
I'd go Josh Sargent. I think he's the best striker in the Championship right now. 41% of people said Kiefer Moore. 22% said Adam Armstrong. 19% said Josh Sargent. 18% said Sammy Schmodz. And finally, who do you prefer, John Swift or Taylor Swift?
John Swift.
I'd go T-Swizzle. I love Taylor Swift.
No, I bet John Swift, I bet his carbon emissions aren't horrific.
I knew you were going to bring that up. You just can't let it go, can you? I tell you what, my partner was watching the tour that's on Disney Plus right now, and it was on in the background while I was watching games back, and I was like, she's got some bloody banging songs.
Yeah, but John Swift's got some banging goals. So I tell you what you should do. Get your other half to watch a compilation of John Swift and then compare it to Taylor Swift's tour and we'll see who comes out on top. It'll be your old John boy.
You might be right.
Your old John boy.
You might be right. Now it's time for this.
Hi, Simon, Grace and Ed.
Yes, it's time for Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. So I'm going to ask Justin to name eight of a certain subject. All he's got to do is name all eight. So, for example, if I would say name Steve Bruce's last eight clubs and he would say Villa, that's one down, Newcastle, another down. But if Justin were to then say Weymouth, he would lose a life. So all he needs to do is give me all eight answers without losing all of his lives. And you can get involved in the fun by sending in your Hateful Eights for either Justin or I to answer. Send them into secondtierpod@gmail.com and you could get a shout out the next time we do a Hateful Eight. That's exactly what Alex Tuggle has done. Thank you, Alex. He wants you to name the last eight teams in the Championship to compete in the playoffs in consecutive seasons. That's the last eight teams in the championship to compete in the playoffs in consecutive seasons. You've got three lives on this one, Justin, and you've just pulled a face, which is very much one of anguish.
Yeah, because I'm trying to work out what you've said. So teams have got to have played in the playoffs two seasons in a row.
Yes.
That's it. Okay, right.
Sorry. Yeah.
Right. It wasn't as hard to decipher as I thought it'd be.
I didn't think it was. Who's your first answer?
I will go with, the one that's coming to my mind is Swansea.
Swansea are correct. They lost in the semis in 2020 and they lost in the final in 2021. So that is one down, Justin.
One down. I will go with, it's actually really hard because now I can't think of any teams that are finishing the playoffs. I will go with Derby.
Derby's obviously correct. They lost in the semis in 2018 and in the final in 2019. So that's another one down. You've got six to go, Justin.
I'll go with Fulham as well.
Fulham is also correct. They lost in 2017, but won promotion in 2018. So that is three down. That's five big ones left, Justin.
I don't know if Wednesday did it. I want to say they got to the semi-final and then lost in the final to Hull the next season. So I'll go with Sheffield Wednesday. Or it might have been the other way around.
Sheffield Wednesday is also correct. They failed to win promotion in both 2016 and 2017. They are the seventh most recent side on this list. So you're halfway there, Justin. I tell you what, if you just name teams who have been involved in the playoffs over the past few years, you won't be too far off.
Yeah, but I can't just name teams who have been involved in the playoffs over the last few years because I've got two lives, three lives, Ryan. Give me
exactly.
A break. All right, Brentford.
Just go mad.
Brentford.
Brentford are correct. They won promotion in 2021, having lost in the final the season before. So that's three left, Justin.
Not Sheffield United because they went up automatically. So, let's throw out who got into the playoff final last season. It was Coventry, Luton.
Luton are also correct. They got promoted last season, but also lost in the semis the season before. You've got two remaining, Justin. You're looking for number four and number eight on this list.
Number four and number eight. I'll go Norwich then.
Norwich are incorrect. They do not feature on this list. So that's one life down, Justin. You've got two left.
So the seventh most recent was, who was that again, sorry?
The seventh most recent was Sheffield Wednesday in Sheffield 2016
Wednesday.
And 2017.
Ooh, so 2015, 2014. All right, then I'll go with Brighton.
Brighton are correct. That's an unbelievable shout from you just now. I didn't think you'd get that one. They actually finished in the playoffs in three seasons out of four between 2013 and 2016 and failed to win in any of them. But they're not worried about it anymore, are they? So that means you've got one remaining, Justin. Can you name the team who's number four on this list?
Number four on this list. This is when it gets difficult because I generally cannot think of any teams. So I'm just going to throw out, trying to think who went up in the playoffs. You had Fulham, there was Cardiff. No, Cardiff were automatics. This is actually really hard. I'm just going to throw you Aston Villa.
Aston Villa are correct. Of course they are. I thought that was a pretty obvious one, really. They lost in the final in 2018, but won in the final in 2019 against your beloved Derby County. Hence why I thought it was an obvious one, Justin.
Yeah, it should have been, but I forgot that Fulham beat them. So I did a merry-go-round with Villa, didn't I? I just mentioned every club they were involved in the playoffs with, bar Villa. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you did. But you got there in the end, Justin. Congratulations. Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight win. And that was a tricky one as well. So you've done bloody well there, dear boy. So congratulations to you. And congratulations to us for completing another episode of the Second Tier podcast. And congratulations to you, listener, for being along for the ride. Of course, it's an international break coming up, so we'll be back again on Thursday to give you a news roundup of everything that happens in the championship over the coming days. So we look forward to seeing you then. But this has indeed been the Second Tier Podcast. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Peach.
And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.